Okay, today I'm just outside of Huddersfield with Brian Chappell, aka Jimmy Justice, for people that go on Twitter. Brian, thanks very much for agreeing to talk to me today. So let's cut to the chase. Basically, you're a bookie hater, aren't you?
Well, first of all, thanks very much for coming all the way from Devon to interview me. It's really appreciated. And I want to knock that on the head straight away. Justice punters and myself are not bookie haters. In fact, personally, up until about 4 years ago, I was an advocate for the industry because I'd been betting for over 35 years and only ever had one complaint. So this business around we hate bookies is not true. What we do hate is bookmakers that don't trade fairly.
Okay, so just going back to what I said to begin with, we'll go back on that in a minute. People know you better as Jimmy Justice on Twitter, and it's one of my pet hates. As a campaigner, you're not afraid to stand up and be counted. So how come you don't use your proper name instead of a moniker?
Well, if we started again now, I would. But when we first started, we genuinely didn't have a clue how this was going to go. So we went for the Justice for Punters title for the website, and the Jimmy Justice side was just a bit of a joke, really. And certainly, if it wasn't for the business of never change your brand, never change your image, we would change that now, but there's just no point. And I think it is fair to say that most people who show any interest in what we do at all, especially the corporate bookmakers, know that Jimmy Justice is Brian Chappell.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about the Justice for Punters group that you run, and tell us a bit about your members and what your game plan is?
Okay, no problem. We started Justice for Punters around 2.5 years ago now, but things started before that, and there was a small group of three or four of us that had met. Okay, and just to give a bit of background to those people, so me first of all, I had my first bet at about 8 years of age at York Racecourse with my granddad. I was a regular punter while I was still in school. I'm sure the Gambling Commission don't want to know that. And as I've already mentioned, I spent years and years in pubs when people were moaning, saying bookmakers were making a fortune, etc. Saying, look, I've had one dispute with a bookmaker over a long period of time. I have far more disputes with my bank, insurance company, etc. That all changed, like I say, 4 years ago. But anyway, I'm a non-pro, okay, but I do take my betting seriously. And I treat 16 runner handicaps like a times crossword. And yeah, no bookmaker is going to make loads of money out of me, but they do have a chance of making money. I've never been a pro, I've never been a person that's turned over big profits at all. So I had no concept of what was going to happen when I actually started taking the online game more seriously 4 years ago. So that's me. Another of the guys, exactly the same, a little bit older than me, so still in his 60s, £20, £15, £10 punter, takes the game seriously. And then we've a couple of guys who I can't really talk too much about because they're industry insiders. And also one chap that I met really early on, which was after I read his book Speaking with Forked Tongues, which was Mick McDermott. So I'd sort of met with these different people to start with. I came up with the concept, and we decided 18 months ago, 20 months ago, to start the website. So where are we trying to go? Well, if I really touch on why we set the site up, and it's not about bookie hating, okay? It's all about fairness, 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 okay? If you do what your license is for, and if you do what you advertise, you're fine. If you don't do that, expect to be challenged. And there are various factors that sort of said to us, we have to try and do something. Not that you know, we're losing our living. None of us are full-time punters. And so we were looking at things. After I'd had this, you know, this account restricted or this best odds guarantee taken away, and it was all happening, and I was sat watching at the races or whatever, and these large corporate bookmaker PR people were still coming on saying, we've taken a fortune for this, we've taken a fortune for that. And I'm thinking, well, who have they taken it off? Because if anybody shows any ability at all, you get your stakes restricted. So that was one side. But probably bigger than that was all the business with the terms and conditions. And also the thing that really got me going, this is not for all the first small group, but the thing that got me going was the ID abuse. Maybe I am arrogant, maybe I am a gruff, difficult Yorkshireman, but you know, I was trying to get £40 and I was asked for my passport and then to stand next to my passport and take a selfie next to my passport page. And I went to an ADR and they found for the company and said I couldn't have my £40 unless I provided this passport selfie. Unlucky for them, and this might sound arrogant again, I didn't need the £40. And that really, really was the thing that got me going, that somebody was saying to me that I was a liar and that I was not who I was. And they were asking for very, very personal information from me, not for criminal reasons. It's £40 we're talking about. And it was even worse when the ADR found for the company. So, you know, these are things which built up, and awful customer service, hopeless regulation. And so we decided that we were going to try and do something about those things. And I suppose the big one early doors that we did manage to get going was the Competition and Markets Authority investigation. So it's all about fairness. It's not about hating. It's saying, do what you're saying on your tin. Okay, if you're saying you take bets, take bets. I recognise fully that bookmakers are a business and they can't automatically lose 10 and 20 and 30 and 40, 50,000 to one customer each year. But please don't tell me that people betting at £25, £20 are a danger to large corporations. They're not.
Okay, so one body that seems to have had a lot more publicity than you, which is the Horse Race Bettors Forum. What are your opinions on them and how do they differ from what you guys are trying to do?
Okay, I applied to be on the first Horse Bettors Forum, and to be fair to Simon Rowlands, when I was turned down, we spoke on the phone and I didn't have a problem with that. You know, at the time we hadn't started Justice for Punters. I had no profile whatsoever, so it did not surprise me. And the only big difference between us is that the Horse Bettors Forum just deal with horse racing, whereas we have positioned ourselves at looking at all aspects of the gambling industry. So that is the major difference. Do we agree on everything? We agree on the vast majority of things. Where we do tend to disagree is how to go about changing things. And I think it is really fair to say that we are much more controversial than what the HBF are at times. And there's a reason for that, in that we are dealing with much wider issues, especially things like problem gambling, etc. And we're dealing with completely different media. It is fair to say that the HBF have a much bigger profile than us in the racing media. There's no question about that. But we have a much, much bigger profile with the BBC and other major media outlets. But yeah, we're both very supportive of each other.
Now, I understand that, you know, regardless of you sort of being less high profile, you've built up a relationship with the regulators. Can you tell us how you manage that in such a short period of time and how is it going?
Well, if we're totally honest, We are really surprised that we got through those hallowed doors in Birmingham so quickly. But I think that's where we're so different from our Twitter profile. The Twitter profile is planned, okay? And it's planned to be controversial. It's planned to ruffle some feathers. There's no question about that. But if you're going to get anywhere with regulators, as my professional career taught me, you've got to do more than that. So what we started doing was collecting evidence from customers. And that was really one of the things that changed everything. There were two or three things which changed, let's say, how we got in the door and how far we've got. But let's just concentrate on that for now. So we're collecting evidence. We're then going to the regulator and we're saying, are you aware of this? Are you aware of that? And let's say, at first, we were fobbed off. But then we had a massive amount of luck, which was Sarah Harrison coming into post. Okay? And she sort of said, look, these guys are collecting evidence and they're collecting evidence from consumers. Let's get them down here. And it would be fair to say that myself, I'm sure Sarah would back this up, that myself and Sarah didn't get on all that well to start with. But I think we grew to respect each other, which is so, so important. Whereas, right at the very beginning, before we even started Joseph for Punters, we tried to open similar dialogue with major members at the Association of British Bookmakers. And you talk about developing a respect, that was the complete opposite. It was, you can get lost, we're not even going to talk to you. And I think there was just this sort of hope that we would disappear and we would, etc., etc. Anyway, complete opposite that. So we're in the door and we just had a couple of meetings about general things, minimum bet law, terms and conditions. But most important for them at that point was the terms and conditions. And I compiled a list of unfair terms and conditions for them and the Competition and Markets Authority. I have to say that was not difficult. It didn't take hours, because even though some of the terms and conditions have been slightly improved now, there isn't an online bookmaker that has a set of terms and conditions that would stand up in a court of law. So it's not difficult actually doing that. But the CMA, to be fair, because they'd never really been involved in gambling, were rather taken aback. And they said, well, Brian, all 10 that you've sent here are all illegal because they're all unfair. And so we began to develop this relationship by collecting and providing evidence. But the relationship is not easy. All of us think it's important to be inside the doors of the Gambling Commission, but we will never be and never become their PR agents. So we do have some difficult times whereby we do have fallouts, we do have big disagreements, but so far, in the main, so good. But we would like to see things moving much, much quicker.
Okay, Brian, you've mentioned that you've got an ear to the BBC. First of all, how on earth did you manage that? And can you give us a bit of a background to your approach to the media, please?
Okay, yeah. I think, again, this is one of the things that we've done quite differently, because everybody that we met with, people on social media, were just complaining about the Racing Post, complaining about Racing UK, ATR, Channel 4 Racing, which became ITV Racing, saying, why don't they ever cover people not being able to get a bet? Why don't they ever cover unfair terms and conditions? But it's primarily around not getting a bet. And we took the opposite attitude to that, because we fully recognised that we could continue to bang our head against a brick wall, knowing really that the specialist racing media were not going to cover these issues in great depth. Yes, the Racing Post have covered it, but compared to all the pro things that they cover bookmakers with, it's been very, 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 very minimal. So we thought, okay, let's go to the media that don't have a financial interest in the gambling industry. So we tried various things, and we've done quite a bit with The Guardian, we've done quite a bit with The Times, but the big breakthrough was the BBC. Okay, how did we do it? Again, it's going to be really boring, this, because it's all to do with a bit of luck and hard work, really. I'd tried various places, Panorama, different things. And then I came across, well, I knew about You and Yours on Radio 4. And I thought, why don't they ever cover gambling? All right. So I got in touch with them and said, what were we doing? And you need to bear in mind that it's very unlikely that a media organisation like that, that their first priority would be a minimum bet law. So you've got to be cute, really. So we went in with our first story about, it was about not paying out, and it was a casino, and this guy was owed 30,000 pounds, which was a life-changing amount for him. And they wouldn't cover the story, understandably, without meeting one of us, or two of us anyway. As it turned out, there's only me that could go, and it's not far to Salford for me. And I met one of their producers, and the important part of the story is that I actually said to her, I says, look, these are the issues that you could cover, and you're not going to believe in this meeting that we're having now that everything I'm saying is true. And after 6 months and two stories, she actually said to me, Brian, everything you said to us 6 months ago has come true, hasn't it? And I says, I told you that. I told you about them not paying out. I told you about not taking bets. I told you about problem gambling. And it really was a game changer that you had a major media organisation that were willing to run regular stories about what was happening in the gambling industry. And that first story was amazing in that they went to the casino house, told them that they were going to run the story. They were going to run the story, I can't remember whether it was a Thursday or a Friday. They do everything right under the media code, you know, give right to reply. And the company came back to them and said, we'll pay this guy tomorrow if you don't run the story. Fatal mistake, okay? It's the BBC, guys. You might think you're big as some sort of corporate casino house. Their reaction was, thanks very much, you pay him, but we're still running the story. And amazingly, by the time the story ran, he'd been paid. So that was the positive side of the story, but the damage was done. And then it got even worse later on, when we ran a story to do with problem gambling, so a person who had lost a significant amount of money, and he ended up in residential psychiatric care. And while he was in residential psychiatric care, the gambling company concerned were still sending him texts of free bets, well, mainly free spins. And his consultant psychiatrist wrote to the company and said, will you please stop pestering my patient? And they continued to do it. So the BBC decided to run the story, and they were threatened with being sued by the company. That was the worst thing ever. But it shows a little bit, again, around the arrogance that some of these companies have, and perhaps why they've never engaged with us and things, that they think they can just bully people. And if that's your choice, that's your choice. But of course, the BBC were not caving into that. And the story was run, and basically the guy ended up getting compensation, etc., etc., etc. So this completely different approach of, okay, we were not getting the minimum bet law that lots of people want. I mean, there's a few people that don't want that, but the vast majority who shout a lot do. but we were getting the coverage. We were beginning to expose around fairness. How is it fair if you gamble with a casino for 2 years and then you happen to have a big win and they refuse to pay you? How is that fair? And don't forget, a lot of these casinos are owned by what, you know, most people that watch this program would associate as being bookmakers, sports bookmakers, racing bookmakers. So it was all this approach of broadening out, okay? Broadening out, looking for stories that we knew the media would cover. And since we got the trust of the BBC, obviously then others came on board. So we've now had stuff in Irish Field. In fact, there's been quite a few stuff in there. Daily Mail. But primarily, we've targeted places like The Times. We've even had a front page Times, front page in the printed paper story. So that has been so important. I said earlier about the customer evidence, but the breakthrough with the BBC and other major media, those were the two big things. And just concentrating on the truth, right? Concentrate on the truth, concentrate on fairness, and you will get some coverage.
Okay, what are the biggest misdemeanors and bad practice that you consider, at least, that bookmakers use that you'd like to see abolished forthwith?
that's a really difficult question. So if we think about going from opening an account online to ceasing to do business with the company, okay? And this is going to take quite a while now, but if you think about it, you watch, I don't know, you're maybe not a gambler or haven't been a gambler, and you watch Manchester United versus Chelsea on Sky TV, and you're bombarded with adverts, and those adverts are telling you that sports betting is aspirational, you could be a professor, you could bet with your gut, you could whatever. And don't forget, just at present, if you bet savvy, you're very, very welcome at one of the major companies. And so you're bombarded with this advertising. So you go along and you open your account. Don't tell me that anybody has a concept at this point that if you're one of the tiny number of people who wins using logic, that you will not have that account for very, very long. So that is your starting point, okay? Like I say, fairness, tell the truth. The truth is that if you are a recreational punter without aspiration, you're absolutely fine. If you play the game and you have bets that are just coming from your guts, or bets on your own football team, or bets on an horse because the bloke in the pub told you that he knew a trainer from 45 years ago and they've set one up for today, you won't have a problem. And the services in that situation is absolutely fantastic. You'll get your free bet on a Saturday or whatever, or if you lose so much in a week, you'll get 25% back. And you fulfill this sort of image from those adverts. But let's be clear, if you show abilities that you may win, you will be restricted. There is no question about that. So that is your starting point. What should we do about that? If we, you know, we're about fairness, we often quote law and things like that. We're not lawyers, but we now have access to people who can advise us on that. And basically what we're talking about here is breaking the law, okay? If you're going to advertise something that is aspirational, you have to provide a service that allows that aspiration. So if you're going to stop anybody from winning using skill, that should be quite clear on the advert. It should be quite clear when you sign up, when you sign up, you should have to tick a box which says this is purely for recreational purposes, and if you use any techniques, any methods, any systems that may suggest to us that you are not going to be economic for us, you will not be able to trade with us. So that's your starting point. Okay, then we move on to terms and conditions. Who reads terms and conditions? All right, boringly, I have started to do. And I had a look at some recently. I won't say which company, but all I will say is that they've already been censured by the Competition and Markets Authority. 32,500 words are their terms and conditions. Who is going to read 32,500 words? So you need a summary of no more than 500 words of what the important terms and conditions are, because it's a major issue, you know, especially if you gamble, if you gamble in casinos. Yes, there have been recent changes, which I'm delighted to say that we had a big hand in. But I mean, really, for years, casinos have been making offers where it was impossible to win. 99% of the time, you couldn't win. And the 1% of the time that you did, it was likely that you'd infringed a term and condition. So maybe you'd managed to get through the times 50 turnover. So you'd signed up, got your 100 quid extra, turned over 15,000 or whatever, and you were left with, I'm making this up now, but we've had loads of cases like this, you were left with 1,400 quid in your account. And then you get this email saying you can't withdraw because you actually had £6 on roulette on January 27th. And that's an infringement. It said in the terms and conditions on page 53 that actually you can't have more than £5 on roulette, so you now can't have your money. So this person had been gambling for days and days and days, turning over N thousand, and the company already knew that they couldn't lose, because if the person lost all the money, they'd keep it, and if they didn't, they would have this term and condition that actually stopped them having to pay out. And that is the stage that we were at when we started. Don't tell me that's fair. Don't tell me that's open. It is unfair, and it is verging on corrupt.
Okay, Brian, I think most people would be flabbergasted by how part two ended. But we go back to horse racing, which probably most people that watch this are interested in. So, punters that do well, they can't get on, they get their accounts restricted, get closed, so they open other people's accounts. We've heard a lot about that from professional punters that I've interviewed. Now then, what's your opinion on that for starters? And once those bets have been taken, regardless of who the actual origin of it is, should they be honoured?
Of course they should be honoured, okay? There's got to be trust between a bookmaker and a customer. And that works both ways, which we'll come on to. But who's caused this problem in the first place? Okay. It's arguably because people can't get a bet. So if you're going to restrict everybody, and that's right from £5 stakes upwards, some people are therefore going to try and get their own back, and they're going to bet using other people's names. Okay? And as far as we're concerned, until there's a proper, and I mean proper, like the Victorian one, like the Queensland, New South Wales one, until there's a proper minimum bet law in this country, why should people not try to get round what is happening to them? Okay, because on the other side of the coin, if you wish to multi-account when you're losing big style, you'll be allowed to multi-account. Don't worry about that. Okay, so again, it's double standards. It's not fair. If you can't get a bet on and you're trying to place a 20-25 pound bet at 10 to 1, it's ridiculous. Okay, and that has led to this mad situation that we're presently in, where, you know, the top pros and people who are working at it day in, day out, so not necessarily winning tens and tens of thousands, but they are winning, they spend half their life trying to recruit people to use their ID etc., etc., etc. So the companies are spending a fortune on trying to identify these accounts. The customer is spending a fortune in time recruiting people. A minimum bet law will not solve it completely, but it changes the dynamic whereby at least the people who are willing to play fair will be able to get a bet on. Whereas racing is losing lots of people who are potential losers. Okay, they have a good run, they get restricted. They have a good run at just backing horses at a bigger price than what their SP is. They get restricted. These customers in the medium term may be losers. And even if they're not, let's say they're breaking even, or they're not losing the required, I don't know, 7 to 10% or more that's expected for them to be value. It's not what it's about. Okay, you put the prices up, all right? You take the bets, honour those bets, and come up with some sort of scheme whereby the punter can perceive that you're playing fairly. All right, and then you might have justice for punters not becoming justice for bookmakers, but you might be able to change our views on multi-accounting, etc., etc. We don't want to see people multi-accounting. We would prefer that it didn't happen, okay? But if you're not playing fair in the first place, and let's not forget all the ID abuse that we've not, you know, we have touched on it. But to enable you to close everybody down so quickly, we've proven, and we've now discussed it recently in a joint meeting with the Information Commissioner's Office and the Gambling Commission, that many large corporate bookmakers are breaking EU and UK privacy laws. So why should we show a great deal of sympathy if somebody decides to try and actually get round these systems? Because from what we've seen, the sharing of personal data in breach of privacy law is massive. And again, it's another thing that's been denied. So if you want us to change our position on that, we're perfectly happy to do. But you've got to go towards a minimum bet law, whereby then you can say to people, look, if you've been able to get on your chosen horse a liability of £500 all across odds checker, if you want more than that on, you're greedy. So maybe then we become justice for bookmakers.
Right, I'm going to interject there. You mentioned greedy, You mentioned punters. And we got to say, I've worked on course for 25 years. I still see knockers walking around the racetrack now like they're king of the ring. Bookmakers get a right old, you know, lambasting from the Gambling Commission and from guys like you if they do something wrong. Should bookmakers be allowed to publish the names of known knockers so that other bookmakers don't fall into it? Because there's a lot of punters out there that don't play the game either.
That's a difficult question, okay? Publishing people's names, I would think you are going to fall foul of the law there.
Well, if they paid up, they wouldn't be published.
Correct. But I would think that the Information Commissioner's Office are not going to take kindly to that. Do we support punters who don't pay? Do we support punters who break the law? Of course we do not. Okay? Of course we do not. And, you know, we would, like I just said earlier, if the large corporate bookmakers decided to move away from their practices of removing all risk from their processes, treating customers fairly, we would go away. You know, I would never sit here and say we would be campaigning for bookmakers, but we will never support punters not paying. We will never support punters doing illegal things. That's not what we're about. Like I've said all along, we are about fairness, and that is fairness on both sides.
So do you ever get punters that come to you that are trying it on and looking for your support?
Absolutely we do, yeah. And I would think over the over the 20-month period that we have been taking cases, I would think we've definitely had 2 to 3 occasions where there's been a group of people who have been, let's say, trying the same scam on. All right. Now, we can never be 100% certain whether somebody's been upfront or not, but we have a policy. If we're worried about something, we will send an email saying to the person, we don't know which way this dispute's going to go. We only have your side of the story. So, but we do have concerns about what you're talking about. So you need to think about it. You maybe use Resolver. That doesn't work. You use an ADR, probably IBAS, but not always these days. It can be eCogra and others. That doesn't work. So you're then left with a court of law. Would you stand up in a court of law and defend what you've put in this email to me? Because if you won't, you need to stop now. And to be honest with you, that appears to get rid of most of the more dubious things that we get.
Okay, so getting away from casinos, mm-hmm. bookmakers taking bets on horses, dogs, mm-hmm. football, whatever. What's the biggest injustices that you've helped to rectify?
Okay, they're definitely not paying out issues, yeah? Okay. And it really is all this business to do with delaying payout. And I have to say, we are making progress there. So you have people who have suddenly amassed, and I'm talking about tens of thousands here, okay? And one that sticks in my mind was a guy who had won just under 80,000, okay? This is on sports betting. And all of a sudden, he gets this email saying, we have decided, at our sole discretion, so we're back to terms and conditions again, at our sole discretion, illegal term and condition, that we suspect, so you're not actually saying he has done this, we suspect that you are part of a group of people working together. So you go back and say, where is the evidence for this? It's at our sole discretion. We don't have to provide that evidence. Wrong again. Okay? So you end up in this battle helping somebody to get just under £80,000. It's obvious who's going to win. Okay? So why is that going on? It's going on because they're hoping the person is going to lose money while they're waiting. And that happens. We've had people lose up to £10,000 while they've been waiting to be paid out. Now, you could turn around and say, well, that's their fault. No, it's not their fault. Well, it is their fault for doing it, but they should have been paid out. And I'm absolutely certain that if they chose to take that to a court of law, that they would get that money repaid. Because it's ridiculous. You can't just make things up. You can't just say you are part of a syndicate or you are part of putting money on with somebody else if you're not willing to put that evidence forward. And that is one of the major, major things coming in on October 30th. I don't expect people to have read the new bet dispute ADR regulations in full. But from now on, and it's amazing that this has never been the case, that the evidence that the bookmaker provides to the ADR will now have to be seen by the customers.
What's ADR?
ADR is Alternative Dispute Resolution Body, so somebody like IBAS, all right?
Okay, so what would be your absolute goal that you could sort of say mission accomplished? What would be the one thing that you would like your Justice for Punters to achieve before you turn it in?
Okay, there are two things that we haven't made much progress with that I would like to address. One is minimum bet law. Okay, I accept the arguments against I accept that there will have to be changes in some of the promotions that are offered, but if we're sticking on the fairness bit, it has to be that there is a minimum bet law, like the Australian states. It's the only fair way forward. So that is number one. Number two, we've not really touched on. It does affect sports punters. It does affect horse racing punters. Okay, there's a fair argument to say that it affects casino punters more. But we want to see, and really, really quickly, an improvement in processes for identifying those with gambling problems. Because at the present moment in time, it is an absolute joke how people can be identified and literally banned from sports betting, really. Okay, the companies will say, no, we don't ban people. Well, hang on a minute, 10 pence, a 10 pence stake being offered is a ban. How can you do that so quickly when you cannot, with the same software, with the same processes, pick up somebody who has lost more than 50,000 in 24 hours or 150,000 in 6 months? Why are you not intervening properly? So it's that balance. It's two ends of the scale. Treat people fairly, okay? Let them have a bet up to a certain liability and improve your processes to protect vulnerable people, because gambling is an addiction for a small number of the population, but it's a significant number.
And you're confident you can achieve that?
No. we are trying, okay? We're giving our time for free. We don't even take expenses, all right? Let alone fees. So we're giving our time freely, and I just hope that people can get, from what I've explained here of what makes up the main group of people from Justice for Punters, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're not professional gamblers, okay? We are trying to make a market which has got out of control, and I think most of the companies recognise that now, by some of the talk, the PR, not all PR, but the talk that's coming out of the companies over the last 2 to 3 months, they recognise that the game is up, okay? And they're going to have to treat people more fairly.
Right, and on that note, Brian Chappell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Look out for our regular money-back offers, including Pipped at the Post on selected horse racing and Saved by the 90s for all Premier League and televised championship matches. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.